summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. I am Tan Chung Han, and with me is Brian Fernandez. 36 minutes past 7 a.m. Time now for our World Market Watch. And on the line, we have Vishnu Vardhan, Head of Economics and Strategy with Mizuho Bank in Singapore.
Good morning, Vishnu. This week, the Bank of Korea and the Bank of Indonesia will be announcing monetary policy decisions. And Bank Negara in Malaysia is set for a rate decision on the 25th. What is your view on the monetary policy bias for Asian central banks for 2018?
Well, I think if we look across the board, what we do anticipate in 2018 is for most Asian central banks to begin to tighten policy. That's to say, they will probably start to raise interest rates, but they'll probably go about this in a rather gradual fashion. So we anticipate that the Bank of Korea could deliver another 25 to 50 basis points worth of rate hikes, though not immediately. So for this week, we anticipate Bank of Korea and Bank of Indonesia will both stay on hold. But going into the second half, we think even Bank Indonesia will start to lift rates a little bit more. And I think Bank Negara Malaysia has already made it very clear that their bias is a hawkish one. So they're going to tighten policy or to raise rates as well. The question is how quickly these central banks move and how much they move this year. There is a sense that the central banks do not want to rush into this because they want to assess the breadth of the global recovery as well as the durability of it.
Now, moving on to oil prices, they've been rallying in the past couple of weeks and have passed the $70 mark. Bullish voices are pointing to a steady improvement in key fundamentals. So, for example, inventories are falling and U.S. crude inventories, for example, have not been this low since early 2015. What's your view on oil markets? Is this rally sustainable or is a pullback imminent?
Well, you know, at the risk of sounding, too pessimistic, my sense of this is that there are two aspects of this which is not sustainable. One aspect is the rate at which we've seen oil prices rising. It's been a very sharp rise for oil prices from about $60 to about $70. In fact, maybe a little more than that, depending on your horizon. I would be the first to agree that markets have been caught out by a bit of a supply crunch, but that has been due to a confluence of factors. So it's been a conspiracy of the right factors. Right after OPEC announced their extended output cuts, we've had a lot of supply disruptions from the Middle East all the way down to the U.S. And we've also had this exceptionally cold front that's overall nudging energy prices higher. Our sense is that some of this will scale back, especially if oil prices, and in this case Brent price, continues to go above 70 and it tests 75 or 80. We think, we see the initial signs of this, that the U.S. producers, the shale producers, will start getting back into the game and they will shift the supply such that oil prices could moderate. So what we are looking at for this year is prices between $65 to about $75, and we think that it will scale back as we go into this year rather than sustaining the bullish momentum.
Now, looking at Europe, economic confidence there has reached its highest in nearly two decades. So according to a recent Bloomberg survey of economists, they've polled an average of 2.2% growth in the Eurozone this year. Which sectors or countries are you most optimistic about over there?
Well, I mean, if we looked at the surveys, and that will tell you that consumers are feeling a lot more upbeat, the manufacturing sector as well, so the PMI surveys came out exuberant. And in that sense, I think we can cut it up into two different things. Two of the things driving growth in Europe have been consumption has picked up quite a bit. So by advanced European economy standards, consumption has picked up a little bit. The emerging European economies have done a lot better. Of course, their base is such that they move a lot more. But consumption has picked up very strongly as we've seen minimum wages rise across the board in a lot of emerging Europe, and we've also seen consumers turning more confident, and a lot of these places' growth has caught up a lot. We've also seen a lot of places coming from a very low base, so places like Russia and Turkey. We've seen, whether it's policy-induced or commodity market-induced, we've seen growth coming back very strongly. So that's one big reason. The other one is investment. However, as we get into 2018, 2019, we think that that pace could start to moderate a little bit, but overall, European economy will be on a stronger footing as we go forward.
Are there any particular countries that you think that will outperform the rest of the Eurozone?
Well, I think right now the positioning is such that we see the Netherlands and Germany well poised for the manufacturing sector along with Sweden. In emerging Europe, we see Poland, Czech, Slovakia all well positioned as well. Now, the risk that we get into is whether any of these countries will be caught blindsided or wrong-footed on the policy front and would need to tighten policy a little ahead. Of course, the ECB takes care of most of the Eurozone countries, but we're talking about countries like Sweden, where we could see the Nordic countries needing to move a little bit faster on rates, and that in itself dampens the recovery.
Now, you just talked about the ECB. What's your view on the direction of the euro, given the strong growth that we have in the Eurozone and the ECB's expected scaling back of monetary stimulus this year?
Well, it looks like I'm commenting on this a little bit late. We've already seen the euro rallying very strongly, and one of our views for this year would be was for a strong euro because, you know, as you've discussed as well, the European Central Bank is going to scale back on its quantitative easing program, and overall monetary policy is tightening. The economy is on a good footing. The current account surplus is also strong, so the fundamentals are all looking good. However, we are looking out for a point where a strong euro gets in the way of further ECB tightening. And one of the warning signs have come through from a very unlikely place, and that's Germany. So the German central bank is usually very hawkish. But Bundesbank, the German central bank's president, Weidmann, came out to say that the rate increments or rate hikes after the quantitative easing program is stopped will not be rapid. So he is also tempering market expectations of how quickly ECB will tighten. And I think this will be one of the factors holding back excessive euro gains. So we're looking at perhaps once euro starts testing towards 125, it's going to scale back towards 122, 123 levels.
Vishnu, we've had a very unusual phenomena in 2017 where we had almost synchronized global growth, and that momentum is set to continue in 2018. Where do you see the risk to the global growth story?
Well, I think one of the things about the 2017 momentum continuing to 2018 is we think that the base of growth will remain quite strong, but the rate of growth will start to moderate because in the export sector, electronics was exceptionally strong. And that lifted a lot of places out of a low base. As we look at risks going forward, I mean, one of the risks, of course, is that the continued depreciation in the US dollar is starting to cause a bit of imbalances. And also you see that rising commodity prices means that the cost side of things start to rise. And that will also be another dampener. In terms of bigger headline risks, I mean, the rising trade tensions between US and China, or at least what has been laid out, could also come back to the fore as we go into the midterm elections in the US. So political risks come into the fore. And I don't think I need to discuss geopolitical risks. These are hard to call, but I think ever-present. So these are some of the risks we are watching. The policy front in particular is another source of risk because by the middle of this year, instead of collectively adding liquidity to the market, that would be the ECB, the Federal Reserve, and the Bank of Japan, collectively, by Q3, they'll be starting to withdraw liquidity. And that could cause some wobbles in the financial markets if they are caught wrong-footed. So these are some of the risks we are watching this year.
Thanks for your insights, Vishnu. That was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank from Singapore.
And coming up in just a bit, we'll take a look at the local business headlines involving Felda, BigPay and Malaysia Airlines. That's all coming up right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!